Welcome to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster, and we are extremely excited today because we have such a great guest with us.
And it's graduation weekend at Purdue. This weekend, thousands of Purdue students are going to get their cap and gowns on and go down and receive their diplomas.
Indeed they are, and I believe we have someone here who's going to be receiving their
honorary doctorate in agriculture.
In agriculture, correct. Yes.
That's exactly
indeed.
Right. Yeah.
So that leads me to my introduction of Dr. Akin Adesina, who is the Minister of Agriculture and Rural Development in the Federal Republic of Nigeria, and also a graduate of the Purdue Department of Agricultural Economics, where he got his master's and his PhD. So this is very exciting.
It's very exciting. Listen, let me tell you why it's exciting to people like myself, Jessica. It's exciting because all the time I walk into the classroom and I tell my students about the value of incentives, about the power of markets and the importance of institutions and infrastructural support in an economic system to solve economic problems. But you know what? I never have to go out and practice it. I just preach it. But we have somebody with us today that actually goes out and practices this. Can you imagine how powerful that is when I walk into the classroom and I go, hey, look at this guy who graduated from Purdue. It's working.
Yes, indeed. Dr. Adesina, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes, we're so happy.
So, yeah, you know, one of the things that I found interesting when I was going through Dr. Adesina's CV was the quote that he has in there about his graduate research experience, and he said that he conducted research to guide the development of crops, pest management, and soil and water management for poor rural households in the risky semi-arid regions of West Africa. And it just struck me how much this was the beginning of a career in which it seems like you're still doing that, right, Akin?
I am. You know, first and foremost, hey, Jessica and Ken, I'm delighted to be back at Purdue. You know, I'm a Boilermaker, and I always have Purdue in my genes. And, you know, I got world-class education from here. I think whatever I've been able to do globally is because of the breadth and the depth of, scholarship that I got from here, and the broad exposure to global development issues out of here. You know, if you're thinking of a place to go get graduate education, it's Purdue, and I think Purdue was made for that because the environment is such that you will like to study. You know, and I've been very fortunate to have world-class professors here. I think, you know, since I left Purdue, I have always been focused on poor people and developing countries, and that the whole essence of my education is to bring all that together to help to expand opportunities around the world. In particular for poor people. In my field, which is agriculture, when I was here at Purdue, I saw so many things around from the farms around here, how modern they were, and the importance of policy, the importance of farm management, the importance of infrastructure and markets and, you know, institutions and finance. All those things that I learned here, I had to put them to use. And I think that's what I've done all my career in Africa. And when you were talking about, the issues in those small semi-arid countries, I think in the course of my career, I've helped to promote new technologies in Africa, to promote evidence-based policies. You know, as a policymaker, you find that sometimes people make decisions not because of evidence, but because of politics and also because of noise. Newspaper noise. But I'm a big believer in evidence-based policy, and a real effective policymaker must know how to do analytical work. And I think the fact that I have that has helped me tremendously in what I've done. So great to be here, and so, you know, tremendously honored that my department, you, Ken, and all the others put me forward to be honored by Purdue University. But, it's just a delight to be here in my old school.
Fantastic. Well, you know, we're honored to have you back. So I was struck by this idea of evidence-based policy. What a novel concept.
Oh, I know. Wouldn't that be great if everybody everywhere applied?
I'm just curious. are there strategies that you employ to try and help promote that? I mean, what do you do to actually, you know, get other people to follow that notion?
Well, you know, I'll give you a concrete example, Ken, about that. You know, when I became Minister of Agriculture in 2011, I was so excited. I came globally, you know, where I was working for more than 25 years, and the president of Nigeria asked me to come back home to contribute my share to national development. But my first year, my first season was 2012. And Nigeria had a flood, massive flood, which was the worst in the history of the country. And here was I, you know, at the center of all of this. And everybody was saying there was going to be food crisis, famine, so you can imagine how it was. But I wasn't really troubled by it. I had learned in my Purdue grad education the whole, you know, thing called resilience. You know, the fact that you can have shocks in the system and you don't choose the shocks, but you choose your response, and it's what you do to allow you to recover from the shock that matters. So I wasn't particularly troubled by it. But I always look for evidence. So I brought to Nigeria the International Water Management Institute, which is the global center in the world for managing water and issues of flood. And while the whole noise was going on out there in the newspapers, I, you know, rolled over and slept in my office for 10 days. We bunkered in, and we were doing a lot of simulations. We were using, you know, remote sensing, satellite imagery to figure out how much area was covered by water and how much of that was arable land. And we used vegetation data to determine how much of the crop we were going to lose across the country. We broke down into little cells. And on the 10th day, at about 10 p.m., as I was leaving my office, my phone rang. It was the president of the country. Well, I came, can you see me tomorrow morning to discuss this issue of the flood? Newspapers are all I watch with news. We're going to have a food crisis. So I walked in to see the president, but I had facts. I had evidence. We'd done a lot of simulations. And I said, Mr. President, the fact of the matter is that no more than 2% of our food supply was going to be affected because the flood was massive in urban areas. But secondly, because a lot of the farmers had harvested their crops before the peak period of the flood. So I said, I think we're going to be fine, sir. However, I think we needed to go after the water as it is receding and go into dry season and do flood recovery agriculture, you know, so to recover from the impact of that flood. So the president looked at me, he said, you think it's going to work? I said, sure, it's going to work. And on his table, he had piles and piles of papers of people, food importers that have come to him to ask for waivers to bring in food into Nigeria. And he took his pen and he canceled every one of them. And he looked at me, he said, Minister, go get it done. And that was how we started Nigeria's first ever food production in the dry season.
Wow.
Within 3 months, we had recovered from the impact of the flood. Rather than having massive inflation, food price inflation that people talked about, the price of food went down. That, I told the press in Nigeria, is the difference between evidence-based policies and noise in the newspapers. You've got to sift out the noise and base it always on evidence.
That's a fantastic
story. That is such a good story.
Wow. Yeah. That was going into my classroom, if you don't mind. Yes. I'd love to use that as a great example.
You know, when you get your education in a country that's so different from your own country, do you find that there are challenges in applying what you learn in a classroom in a country with a culture and development that's so different from your own? Have you encountered challenges trying to bridge those gaps?
You know, the greatest thing that I got from Purdue was, a very rigorous education. And you had a breadth of things. You took a lot of courses. You got a lot of people. You know, one of the things we got was you know, international agricultural programs used to bring a lot of people to talk to us as students, just like I'm here today, you know, talking. So I got very early to understand that there is no single cookie-cutter approach to solving problems, that countries are very different, ecosystems are very different, institutions are very different. And so you have to have different solutions depending on the problems at hand. But you better know what you're going to do. So that's very, very critical. What I have found is that there are some basic things that you can transfer. I think knowledge you can transfer, and innovation you can transfer and adapt. Institutions, you can learn how to build them and you can transfer them. But in solving local problems, you have to base it on local knowledge. You have to start and understand what is the context. I'll give you a practical example. You know, when I got into Nigeria, I found that the level of poverty in the agricultural sector was very high. And I said to myself that, you know, poverty cannot be a comparative advantage of my country. What am I supposed to do with it? I can't trade with it. I've got to create wealth. And to create wealth requires that I have some policies that would allow me to break the structural poverty traps that I saw on ground. And one of the things that I found on ground was, for more than 40 years, the public sector in Nigeria, the government, had been buying and selling, you know, fertilizers and seeds in the country. Well, it wasn't getting to more than 11% of the farmers, so most of it was creamed off by the powerful elite and so on. And I knew as a minister that unless I could get input markets to work for farmers, I might as well just go home, because that's the fundamental thing for getting productivity. So I took the greatest risk of my life and dismantled an entire public sector system that has been going on for 40 years. It took me 90 days to do that. I took the whole government out of it. I said, the government doesn't sell Pepsi Cola or Coca-Cola, and you find it everywhere, so why is government Biden selling seeds and fertilizers? I said it had to be done by private sector. And then I said, all these people, rent seekers, that were there creaming off the poor, I got to really get rid of these people. So I went to mobile phone technology and used mobile phone technology to deliver vouchers to farmers across the country so they can get their seeds and fertilizers directly from the private sector and forget government. And I told them I would never sign any contract for any private sector guy to bring seeds and fertilizers to government. It was an instant revolution. In 3.5 years, we reached 14.5 million farmers directly via their mobile phones who are using their vouchers to collect seeds and fertilizers that they co-pay for with the private sector. All of a sudden, the number of seed companies in the country grew from 11 when we started to 134. Investments by the private sector in fertilizer manufacturing went up by $5 billion, you know. And the food production in the country went up by an additional 21 million metric tons of food in 3 years, right? Our food import bill went down from $6.9 billion to $4.2 billion. Wow. So it just tells you what happens when you look for local solutions to local problems, even though the economic theory of it tells you that markets are what you need, but how you actually do that requires you look at what's on ground and then you move in. I'm glad I'm still alive to be talking to you.
So are we. This is really inspirational, honestly.
So Akeem, I have to ask you this question. What is it like to work with people like the former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan and Bill Gates?
You know, I'm so honored that I had the opportunity to work with both of them. The former UN Secretary General was my chairman of the board of the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, where you know he appointed me as vice president to work with him in terms of policy and resource mobilization across Africa. Kofi Annan is just an icon, extremely wise, distinguished African that I consider a great asset. I always say, Mr. Annan, you are Africa's contribution to the world. You know, he is helping tremendously to understand a lot of things around international diplomacy, how you work with heads of states, and be more effective in getting things done with them, which I think I do reasonably well, he would say. And Kofi Annan has been a great advocate for the poor. And you know, everything that we talked about, Kofi Annan will always say, how does it, you know, reach the poor? And I remember one day I did ask him, I said, what is that one thing that you will tell me about leadership? And he said in his local language, which is he's from Ghana, you know, he said, the higher a monkey goes, the more of his backside it shows. he said, what that really means is that the higher you go, it's going to be quite easy for people to pick at you. Yeah. And that, you know, in leadership, you've got to understand that. And I've always kept that in mind.
What head. Great advice.
But yeah. Well, Bill Gates has been fantastic. You know, we couldn't have done what we've done in Nigeria without Bill Gates. Bill Gates and Mr. Annan, both of them, they served as members of the Eminent Persons Group for Nigeria's agriculture. I was able to get him and Bill, and that's the first thing, the only thing that Bill sits on for anywhere in the world.
Wow.
So they give us perspectives on what we should do and advice. Bill has been fantastic, both as a thought partner in terms of, you know, telling us some of the things that he thinks we should do about innovations and technology, but also big financing. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funded quite a lot of the technical support that I have to bring in smart people into government. And so it's just a great honor to have, you know, two global icons like that, the opportunity to work with them.
Fantastic.
Great. Thank you so much. We won't take any more of your time because we know you're on a tight schedule. But
well, I might just ask, very briefly, any advice for current and potentially future students of Purdue Agricultural Economics?
Well, first and foremost, I think take every advantage of what you have here. You know, Purdue is a world-class institution. I think, you know, the fact that you're also right here and, the four things you have to do at Purdue are as follows. First, be in class and study hard. Two, go to the computer room and do a lot of modeling. Number three, make sure you go back to home and eat quite well and come back to school again and do it again. That is what we do here. That is what Purdue prepares you for, to work very hard. I think that students should take advantage of the fact that Purdue has a lot of connections globally and tap into those connections. I'm delighted to hear today about your global food security program, which means that you are impacting the world. And I can say that as a Boilermaker, I wear that very proudly and let people know that this is the best university in the world and bring all the others on. I always say that the others went to the other schools and we went to Purdue.
Boiler up.
Great. So thank you again to Dr. Adesina, who is the Minister of Agriculture and Rural Development in the Federal Republic of Nigeria. And as he said, also a graduate of Purdue's Department of Agricultural Economics. You have been listening to a Purdue Ag Econ podcast, and please visit the department's website at www.agecon.purdue.edu. Thank you.